it is a joy to be back with you guys. That song, let me just throw this out there. If you are going through a time of frustration or whatever, download that song. Play it in your car. That is one of my daughter and mine's favorite songs, and we just put it on. And as she was singing, I can hear my daughter's voice in my head, and it is just priceless. And those words are amazing. And my daughter is 14, which means in August she will be 15, which in the state of Georgia means she gets her learner's license. And I'm not sure I'm ready for that. As a dad, to teach my daughter how to drive, and to do that, we've actually started to practice. We will go to very large empty parking lots, and I will put her on that side, and I've taught her that you don't have to push the gas. You can just kind of push the just let your foot off the brake, and you'll move. And she's starting to learn, and even in a big parking lot, she's found curbs, and I don't. Can't explain that, but I want her to drive, because driving, imagine if you didn't have a car. How many of you have ever had a day or two without a car? Have you ever had that experience? Yes, it's like paralyzing. You have to depend on others. There's just such a freedom that comes in that. And my grandfather, I asked him one time when I was about to turn 16, Grandpa, what was it like when you turned 16? What did you do to have to get your license? He goes, I didn't get my license at 16. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. Because they didn't have cars when I was 16. My grandfather was born in 1897, and he'd passed several years ago. But just the idea of, man, cars, it's just freedom. That literally, and the reason I say that is life without knowing God is literally on the life spectrum, like not having a car is to travel. You can walk, you can ride a bike, you can, but man, just having a car, it opens up a level of freedom that I want my daughter to have the ability to sit in Atlanta traffic and experience that with everyone else. But the freedom that comes, and this series on fulfillment, how do we live life to the fullest? It's impossible to live the created life that God created for us without God in it. And that's why the commandment, Rick pointed it out, it's been throughout the series in Matthew 22. Here's the way to the fullest life. It says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. The second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. We are not going to live fulfilled in this life unless or until we embody this simple statement. Now, the problem that I have found is that I have slipped into several times in my life the concept, the idea of learning more about God, to sit on a Sunday morning, to sit in Bible studies and learn more about God, mistaking that for love of God. And with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with learning how to love God with all that heart, soul, and mind. But if that's all we do and we see that we come to church to do that, then we've missed it all, because the church is not where we go. The church is who we are. This is not a church. It's a building. We are the church. And that second part of that is really, if you look at the grammar of it, it's impossible to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind unless we are loving our neighbor like we love ourselves. Love that way. And if we are just coming to church and going through the motions, and we're learning and we're growing and we're praying and that, but we're not engaging outside those doors, don't miss this, we are deceiving ourselves. We're deceiving ourselves that we're living the life that God wanted us to. And I've been in James in my personal time, and this verse just jumps out at me. James 1:22. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. That concept. I was talking with a friend of mine who's the new president of an international ministry. He was telling me about, they had a gentleman come in and kind of guide him through the focus and vision of where they're headed. He said, Ken, he asked one question. It was the rest of our two-day summit answering this question. He asked a simple question: can I be a disciple of Jesus if I am not discipling others? And he says, not in a big organizational, international way, individually. If I am not discipling others, am I a disciple of Christ? And that just hit me between the eyes. And Jesus makes it very simple for us. He put it this way in John chapter 15:17. He says, this is my command, love each other. That's it. Do that and we get it all. So, but it's something that we have to do outside ourselves. Is are we looking? Are we listening? Are we part of the process? Because it is a process. It's not something we do once and check it off the list. George Barna does surveys, and this one was very convicting to me after I did a survey following it. He asked a simple question of people who have come to Christ, who follow Christ, who've given their life to Christ. He says, how did you get there? What was your process? What was the steps of your process? Over 80% of people who have come to Christ said the first step was a friend invited me to an event or program that met a felt need or desire. A friend, one-on-one, invited me. It's that connection. I asked following that for about 2 years, I would ask people two questions. Do you go to church? How often do you go to church? If they were a regular attender, say 3 out of 4 Sundays out of a month, I asked them, when was the last time you invited someone to anything? Someone that was not in church, in your gathering of members and that. When was the last time you connected with somebody outside the church and invited them to anything? You know what that percentage was? I want you to get your thumbs a second. This is more, this is less. If you think it was more than 20% invite and bring during any given year, just during a year, one time, do you think it was more than 20% or less than 20%? 1, 2, 3, show me. It was 8%. 8% of us, yet 80% are saying that's how I came to faith, and yet less than 8% of us are actually inviting and engaging and connecting with people. Well, my conviction was, how do I get part of the process? And there's two processes that I think will break down those walls. This morning, the first one is to be intentional in the process. To be intentional in the process. Am I looking? Am I listening to my world around me on a daily basis? And my son, one of my three sons, it'll be here this next service, but he's actually in Colorado working at a camp. But it was a beautiful example of looking for that. And I'm not talking about a program or an initiative. I'm talking about just being in our world and taking the initiative when we see needs happen. I have a friend, we're in a supper club together, and the wife of a friend of mine, I'll call her Terry because that's her name. And Terry at our dinner, she said, I got to tell you what happened the other day. I saw Cody, and I got to tell you what happened. And I was, as a parent, you understand, I'm like, oh, is this going to be really good or really bad? And she said, I was at the grocery store. I'm going to the grocery store. And in the parking lot, as I'm walking down the sidewalk, I hear a commotion. I look, a lady's got her back to her van open and boxes have fallen everywhere. She says, I took a few more steps and something caught me out of the corner of my eye. And I see somebody going towards her. And I looked up and she said, it was Cody. And he was jogging between the aisles. He was a couple aisles over, and he just walked over, and he picked up all her boxes, and he said, hey, where are we going? And she said, well, I was going to the UPS store. He goes, all right, let's go. And he's carrying all her boxes. He was going to the grocery store, and he ends up in the grocery store, and my friend Terry said, Cody. He goes, hey, and gave her a hug. She said, I saw what you did. And he was like, what did I do? She said, that lady in the parking lot, she dropped her boxes. You went over and you helped her carry her boxes. Now let me just tell you what he said. I can now die in peace. Because he said, oh, yeah, that was nothing. That's just what my dad would do. Oh. See, I'm convinced without any hesitation that that more will be caught than will ever be taught. And I'm convinced that those moments in our days where a need will pop up, that's God's way of going, I'm going to do something here. You're welcome to join. I'll show you if you'll look. But it's got to be intentional. We got to take those steps. It's listening. It's learning to listen and realize that listening is a process. And it's listening with an ear of Jesus. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie or not, but I encourage you, if you haven't, it's one of my top 20. It's called We Bought a Zoo. And if you haven't seen the movie, it's fantastic. It's an amazing story of a widow with two kids who buys a house, and it's also got a zoo and the zookeeper and the staff. And there's this one moment in the movie where the man who bought the house has a son, he's a teenager, and the zookeeper has a niece, and they kind of connect and talk, and they become a friend. And And yet something happens and she kind of falls away and the zookeeper is helping out and she's talking to the young teenage boy. And she goes, I noticed you and Libby haven't really been together much. And he goes, yeah, I don't know what happened. I just don't know how to talk to girls. And I love what she said next. She goes, oh, talking to girls is easy. The secret to talking to girls is to listen. She said, they'll tell you everything. And I thought, wow. Now, I believe that, but it's a process to learn to listen. I'm going to ask you only probably one more time to raise your hands. Gentlemen, if you're a man here today and you're married, raise your hands real quick. Gentlemen, awesome. How many of you have ever heard this phrase, gentlemen, I don't want you to fix it. I just want you to listen. They say that. Let me just tell you, gentlemen, that is a lie. That is a lie. And they don't realize they're lying. Because, see, ladies, understand this. We understand you think you want that. But when you tell a man to listen, here's what you're telling us. As a man, to listen means to be quiet and to listen to all the details I'm giving you. I want you to evaluate them with me and come up with a logical solution to what I'm talking about. See, that's the way men listen. And I can prove this because I have listened to my wife before. She goes, I don't want you to listen. I just want you to listen. Don't fix it. I'm like, okay, listen, okay. And I'm fighting it. And I'm just, okay. And she stops after about 2 minutes. She goes, never mind. I'm like, what do you mean, never mind? She goes, I can tell you're not interested. I said, I'm listening. She goes, well, you. I said, I can tell you everything you just said because I'm listening to get the details to fix it. But here's the deal. Women, what they really mean is I don't want you to fix it. I want you to listen like a woman. That's what they mean. Now see, women, when they talk, they have no intention of any resolution whatsoever. What they want is they say, I want you to listen. I want you to validate what I'm feeling in this moment. And I can prove it because listening like a woman is totally different. When she says, I want you to listen, what she means is I want you to interrupt me every 3 to 10 seconds with some kind of affirmation, grunt, word, or commendation, just something. Next time she's on the phone, listen to her talk to one of her friends that's a girl. Hey, now what? Huh? What? You have got to be kidding me. I hate her. That's the way women listen. But it is a process to learn that. And it is intentional. Don't miss this. Not only is it's a process of intentionality. And if we will engage those around us intentionally with the idea of look for needs, listen for needs, not just the conflict. We got enough conflict in our world. Abraham Lincoln put it this way. I love this quote. He says, if I do not like a man, I must get to know him better. There was a book out several years ago. How many of you remember the book, 7 Habits of Highly Successful People? Stephen Covey wrote it. I read it and it was amazing. It is transformational, the point. Habit number 5 is simply this. It says, seek first to understand, then to be understood. It's this listening like Jesus. And Jesus, if we'll listen like him, if you go back to the book of John, it basically is the whole beginning, and the Word became flesh and dwelled among us. And it said he came, Jesus came full of grace and truth, full of grace and truth. If you're here today, and it appears like most of you are, but if you're here today and you're kind of in this process of checking God out, this is the beautiful example of how intentional God is with us. He loves you 100%, completely, unconditionally, right where you are, period. And that's grace. That is the grace where we come not fixed, but we come with who we are, realizing I am imperfect and I've sinned and I fall short, and he gives us grace. But he also comes in truth because he loves us unconditionally, but he loves us too much to let us stay there. He wants us to experience life to the full, and it is only when we take his truth and we do his truth that we experience that fullness of life. I heard a gentleman one time says, well, what do I got to give up if I accept God? I said, well, you got to give up hell. That's what you got to give up. But here's the other deal. God will let you do whatever you want, but I'm going to go ahead and warn you. He's going to start changing your wants. And he starts putting within us a desire to do what is good for us, to forgive what happened to us. And he makes us fulfilled. That's what the truth, grace and truth. So not only does it an intentional process, it's also a process of being real, genuine, transparent, of being real with others to connect on that basis. I'll give you a couple examples. I love what Steve shared, and an incredible example of this idea of being real. He had three words that he shared a couple weeks ago. It's stay, in other words, be there, pray for them, and play, just do life with them. And I thought that is probably one of the greatest examples of that process that I've ever seen. And I'll give you a real life example. As I was listening to him, I'm like, Lord, that's it. Now, how many of you have a favorite restaurant? Let me see your hands. All right. Now, let me ask you this. If you go to your favorite restaurant, I want you to raise your right hand if you order the same thing almost every time. All right. Now, how many of you order something different every time? Okay, that's a few of you. That's great. There's no right or wrong answer. Now, I love a place. There's a little restaurant near my house called Waffle House. Now, do y'all know what a Waffle House is? Evidently, you do. Now, some people turn their nose up at that. It's a hole-in-the-wall, greasy spoon type place. I have class. It's just low, okay? But I love a place I can go and leave a $3 tip, and it's the biggest tip of the day for that person. I love that. And I sit in my same little corner booth, but I go there over and over and over. And I probably 2-3 times a week, and I order the same thing, my favorite omelet, an egg white with grilled chicken and tomatoes and onions and mushrooms and a la carte. And they know me. But the cool part is over time, I know them. And I know the waitresses and I know the cooks. And I love that they started just telling me their stories. I love it when the day Whitney came by and she goes, hey, I'm expecting my second child. Oh, that's so great. Your first one, how old's your first one? And we just talked. We just get real. And I love, one of my favorites was Elizabeth. Elizabeth was a waitress. And then one day she was cooking. I'm like, are you guys short of cooks? She goes, no, I'm trying to learn all the stations. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then we get more time, many trips. And she goes, I said, so how's it going? She goes, good. I'm really hoping I've got everything now. But she was a little bit down one day. I'm like, what's wrong? And she was like, I've done everything they wanted to do, but they said I can't have my own unit unless I have an associate's degree at least. And I don't have one. I'm like, oh, have you ever started? She goes, yeah, but it was a long time ago. I don't know if I can do school. I'm like, you can do school. And I said, I'm going to pray for you. And over time, and she started the school. She goes, I'm back in school, and I've got this class. It's tough, but I'm good. And then she told me one time, she goes, you know what? I'm almost done. I'm in my last class. And then about a month and a half, 2 months ago, she stopped by my table in the corner. She goes, hey, just want you to know, Friday's my last day. I'm like, where are you going? She goes, I got my own store. How cool is that? That's love your neighbor. That's just being there. One of my favorite verses, and I want to encourage you with it and challenge us to memorize this verse. It's in Romans 12:15. It says, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. Look at our world. Who around us? Do we know their favorite team? Do we know who they are? Do we pour into them? Do we know where they are? And it's taken the initiative in the time of what's real. I had done a few camps, met a gentleman named Rick, and I hadn't seen him in several years, actually. And it was the time of our life where my daughter was in the last few months of her treatment for cancer. And she's doing great now. She's 14, almost 15. But I got an email, somebody who knew me and knew him said, hey, did you hear about Rick? And I was like, no, what about Rick? He says, his daughter was just diagnosed with cancer. And I said, do you have his number? He said, yeah, and he sent it to me, and I called. I said, Rick, I don't know if you remember me or not. This is Ken. He goes, yeah, I totally remember you. I said, brother, I just heard about your daughter. How are you? And he goes, well, you know what? We're okay. We're figuring it out. You know, it had literally been less than 10 days from the diagnosis. And I said, man, I can relate. I'm very sorry, but I can relate. He goes, man, thanks. And I said, I'm praying for you. He said, thanks. I said, but here's the deal. Brother, one of the greatest benefits we had was there was somebody who literally was down the road from us that answered our questions and helped us out. And I said, I want to be that for you. My daughter has the same cancer. We're almost done with treatment. He said, man, I appreciate that. I'll let you know. And I said, dude, you got to understand, I'm not just saying, you know, let me know how I can help. I'm telling you, you're going to have questions. And it's going to be at the worst times. You call me. I don't care what time of day or night. And about 2 weeks later, about 2 a.m, I get a call and he goes, man, I'm so sorry. I'm like, stop apologizing. Thank you for calling. I said, what's up? And he goes, well, she's got this fever and I think they told us this and this and I don't know what exactly that means. I'm like, okay, here's the deal. It's normal. This is going to happen. It's not an if, but it's a when. And here's what you're going to do, and here's the first step, and everybody's different, but here's what the situation is. He goes, dude, thank you so much. He says, I'm sorry to call my buddy. If you do not call me again, I'm going to be offended. Let me walk with you through this. And over the 2 years of there, we had multiple calls. It's mourn with those who mourn. It's do life together. That's what God calls us to do. That's where we're going to find fulfillment, because there's never pain without a purpose. We don't go through anything that wasn't going to help somebody else's burden in the midst of it. And here's the deal. In this being real part, I want to just share a concept to be thinking about. The Greek and Roman philosophers discovered or developed this idea and realized that every human being at all times is asking one of three questions all the time. Jesus was a master at answering these questions. The first one is, can I trust you? And on what level can I trust you? I recently, now this is over Memorial Day, I've been nursing this dryer, our dryer at home. I do the laundry at my house, and I've been nursing this dryer for about 2 or 3 months waiting for Memorial Day sales. And I don't know where you'd put it on the scale. It's either sad or pathetic or weird, but the highlight of my year so far is I got a new dryer, okay? I don't know where you would rank that, but I was so excited. But when we went to get it, my youngest son, our adopted son, he was like, Dad, look at this one. And I'm like, yeah, that's really great. He says, look at all these doors and all these buttons. And I'm like, yeah, I said, I'm getting a Whirlpool. And he's like, but look at this one. And I said, well, here's the deal, son. We got that particular brand in a dishwasher. And first day we had it, It has never worked. Though it looks good, it's got all the buttons, and it'll either wash dishes for 2 days and never stop, or it'll wash them. We open them, and they're still dirty. It looks cool, but it doesn't do what it's supposed to. I said, now that's the same brand, but I got a Whirlpool. This Whirlpool, they told us when we bought a washing machine, oh, go ahead and get another one. And I said, well, mine still works. And they're like, well, it's only a matter of time before it stops working. I said, yeah. I'm going to wait till that time comes. Do you know it lasted 7 years longer than he said? And I said, dude, here's the deal. I'm getting a Whirlpool. Why? Because my experience with that. You know what? It doesn't have all the bells and whistles. It's got a timer and a button. And it dries clothes. That's what it does. And you know what? That's what I need. I don't need it to look great. And in our world, it is flashy and it's great and it is empty. And yet there's Jesus, and he just simply says, love each other. Build that trust. Let that experience, the more experience you and I have with somebody, the more likely they're going to be like, you know what? I trust you. Then there's caring. The second question is, do you care about me? Not are you a caring person, but do you care about me? My wife and I, when we moved in our neighborhood, we had one of the first homes. Every time they'd finish a home, somebody'd move in, we would go visit. We'd take them muffins. And we'd just go, hey, we live down the street. We're from this area. Where are you guys from? We'd hear their story. Most people wanted to talk. Some were just like, hey, okay, these are the muffins. This is the weird couple down the street. But most people would take that. My wife is just amazing. She's like, you know what? Here's my pediatrician. Here's a couple phone numbers. And here's my number. If you have any questions, just give me a call. And she just hand them that, and we give them the muffins. We go, did you know that over 75% of the people we met would call my wife within 5 days? Because she cared. And then we had an experience. final question that they ask, and they never ask this question until the first two are answered, is how is this relevant to me? Until we seek to understand people, care about them, build that trust, that people don't care what you know until they know that you care. But that relevance starts to happen. Let me just encourage you and I to start engaging people. Start engaging people. There's a couple events. One's this summer in July. A friend of mine's going to be here. And in the fall, I'm going to come back and I'm going to do what I do for my regular job, which is comedy. And it's going to be one of those. And it came out of my neighborhood because I thought, you know what? I need to be doing this with my neighbors. And I started listening and talking. They're like, well, so I said, when are you going to do something local? And I said, well, I'm going to have a show. We're going to do it at this church. And I went around to my neighbors and said, hey, we're having a show. And if you want to come, you can come. You know, 12 out of 13 invitations, they said, yeah. And I hadn't given them a track. I hadn't shared my faith. I just said, here. And they came and they loved it. We were walking the neighborhood after that show and just saying hey to people. And I had several neighbors come out and just say, hey, it's good to see you guys again. Just, can I tell you something? And I'm like, sure. And they're like, I just want you to know you offended me a little bit. I was like, what did I do? And they're like, well, you didn't invite us to that comedy thing. Well, I will invite you next time. I'm so sorry. People are longing for something that meets a felt need or desire. And we have the answer to what the world has, but are we part of the process? And I want to just close in a word of prayer and just challenge us to memorize that Romans 12, 15, and to start asking the question, Lord, what are the needs around me? Will you let me see with your eyes, hear with your ears, and teach me to listen so that I can engage? Because I will not be fulfilled until I start letting God do that through me. That's where fulfillment comes from. Let's pray. Father, thank you. Thank you so much for your truth and your grace. Lord, we can't come to you without your grace. But thank you for your truth. And Lord, if we're not fulfilled, it's because we're not really letting you use us. Help us to stop deceiving ourselves and take your simple truth to love each other and mourn with those who mourn and rejoice with those who rejoice. And Lord, I pray that this week we would just jump into some part of that process in somebody's life and start looking and seeing and being the church. Lord, we love you. In Christ's name. Amen. Have a fantastic rest of your weekend. God bless you. Can't wait to see you next time.